Hey, welcome. This is Garden Fork Radio. My name is Eric. Thanks for tuning in or dialing in or downloading or however you're listening to this. I have a YouTube channel and this podcast. It's a kind of an eclectic hot mess of whatever is interesting to me and what I think might be interesting for you. And today my friend Rick is here. We're going to talk about vegetable gardening outside the boundaries of your vegetable garden. Right, sir?
I hope so. Good morning, Eric. How are you, my friend?
I have no complaints. That's my answer for most people these days.
It's a beautiful day out there. And as soon as we finish, I've actually been taking a series of courses while all this stuff is going on. By the way, we figured it out the other day. We could survive without leaving the house pretty much. We will be down to our last can of Vienna sausage in about 7 months. I mean, we have enough food stored in the freezers and canned stuff around here to last for quite a good while. But I'm looking to add to that with the produce of the garden this year.
Yeah, the gardening season, our spring has been kind of slow and cold, and then it kind of just went boom. And since we have been working remotely here from the house, I would have thought I got a lot more done in the yard, but you know, your day-to-day work that pays the bills still has to get done. So it's, and at the end of the day, you're kind of wiped out.
And you know, gardening is, it can be fun, it can be relaxing, but it can also be hard work. You know, the ability to do this. And I've always said, you know, if you know, hell goes in a handbasket, you know, I'm not really gardening for subsistence right now. But the point is, if things go terribly south, I'm gardening to learn how to garden if I needed to for subsistence.
All right. Well, my gardening has been, hey, let's try this and see what happens. And that a lot of that happened this spring. And I wanted to share that with you all. And I thought Rick could share as well.
Okay.
So I have a raised bed vegetable garden.
So do I.
There's six beds. Two of them are garlic. And one of them is a flowers only bed, cutting flowers.
Mm-hmm.
My neighbor is a big dahlia enthusiast and dahlias multiply. They look like sweet potato tubers all kind of gang together to a stem, and right, you can separate them. Aaron from the Impatient Gardener is probably talking back at the podcast right now because I'm mashing this up.
Well, but she is a big
dahlia expert.
Dahlia person, yeah. I
mean, but you can tease them apart in the, you let them dry, not quite super dry, but you have to keep them over the winter in your basement. And Aaron has many videos on that and blog posts at theimpatientgardener.com. But you can
how do you tease a dahlia? Do you say your mother wears army boots?
Stop.
Oh, all right.
You can, well, imagine a cluster of sweet potatoes with their roots kind of stuck together like a big ball of messed up string, and you can kind of gently pull them apart, and you've essentially created two dahlia plants from one, or three or four dahlia plants from a really big plant. So my neighbor, my friend, gave us some dahlias, and we love them. So this year he gave us more. And so our one raised bed is dedicated to dahlia growing because they're beautiful flowers. And then I have tomatoes, sweet potato, peas, lettuces, things like that. But I've been wanting to, first of all, we had some leftover plants. I had some leftover tomato plants. I didn't have anywhere to plant my sunflower seeds. And I had some extra kale seedlings. And I'm thinking, what if I plant it in that kind of brushy area between the tree line of the woods and the grass of the yard? You know, it's always kind of scrubby and it's full of... It's got goldenrod. It's got Virginia creeper. It's got briars, you know, like wild blackberries that take over the world.
Right.
So I had some... carpet runners, is that what it's called? Like a floor mat kind of thing when Charlie Pup had her stroke, she couldn't walk very well on the floor, the wood floors. And so, So we just ran these carpet runners everywhere, which I'm not a big fan of.
I was trying to make the connection to garden. That lost me for a second, but go ahead.
It's okay. You just listen, sir, you know. So I took the carpet runners that I had rolled them up and I had them in the garage and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to declutter and I'm like, I got to get rid of these things, but they're full of yellow Labrador hair and I didn't quite know what to do with them. But then I realized, oh, I could knock back this weedy, shrubby, grubby area in the early spring and then plant sunflowers here or something else here. So there's several strategic areas where the sun hits the yard even better than it hits the garden, actually, the vegetable garden. I put down those rubbery mats, and then the other day I lifted them up and everything was dead. It was perfect.
Okay, so yeah, you were just, we call it solarizing. You were solarizing the soil so that you sterilize whatever was underneath there, kind of keep the seeds from sprouting too much, kill what was there. Yeah, makes sense.
So then I put in some sunflowers, and I moved around some other plants, or tomatoes are going to go in now. I have some extra tomatoes. And it was just kind of a fun idea. And then by the porch where we come in and out of the house, there's an area it gets kind of muddy sometimes and the dogs make a mess of it. And there's a high traffic area. And the camera operator got some of these very large, they're called cow pots. They are made out of manure, dried manure. And extending that idea of taking the vegetable garden out of the vegetable garden, we're planting some cherry tomatoes right next to the door in these pots. And so I just thought this was all a brilliant idea to share with everyone.
Yeah, well, that is a brilliant idea. You know, you can buy an English garden mix at the blue or the orange store, a big package of it, and spread you know, the whole thing across that space. And you get all kinds of black-eyed Susans and tick seed and different kinds of sunflowers and even some blue things that I don't even know what they are. They look great if you can kind of keep them in one place. I tried it once in our front yard and it grew too tall for the house and the neighborhood and whatnot. And my neighbors actually thought for a while I was just keeping weeds, until they bloomed out. And then they were spectacular, just, you know, yellow and black. And it was just wonderful everywhere.
Is that one of those like straw mats that you buy? It's all rolled up and you just unroll the straw mat and you water it. And
you can do that, or you can just buy a package of what they call English garden mix.
Oh, like a seed mix in a seed packet.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Oh, I was thinking something different.
Oh, well, but that's how I think. I have seen the rollout things. They're pretty. I think they work well, but yeah. I think they're pretty expensive. But and the nice thing is, all this stuff, it's not nice for me now because I'm having to grub it out. But it regenerates because it's throwing seeds. Yeah. But it's also it's attracting birds to your garden. Because they're coming for the seeds and eating them and that kind of thing. But it will regenerate itself over time.
The thing I've run into is the Virginia creeper and the wild blackberries and some other of those plants send out runners. The Virginia creeper just has these underground vines. And so where I lifted up the rubber mat, when I wanted to dig a trench for the sunflower seeds, I ran into all these rhizomy rooty systems. Right. And then I laid down cardboard and then wood chips. And then I cut a slot in the cardboard to be my trench. And I trenched through that for the soil. And it almost like a day later, the Virginia creeper has creeped around the cardboard and is trying to push out my sunflower seeds.
Yeah, that's my nickname, by the way, Virginia Creeper. but yeah, that stuff is awfully invasive. It's kind of frightening sometimes. You can hear it grow. It's like kudzu. You're afraid to sleep outdoors at night because, boy, the kudzu gets you around here.
But I thought that was just, for me, it was an aha moment to take an area that, you know, normally I just whack it back with the with my brush cutter once a year. After, right. Usually after the, I really like goldenrod. I think it's really pretty in the fall. And I'll
it is.
And I'll cut it back down. But then I thought, well, let's kind of mix it up. Instead of having the vegetable garden in its proper place, let's just put it somewhere where there's some sun shining.
Well, yeah, I think sun's awfully important. You know, She Who Must Be Obeyed is working a little plot, mostly going to be flowers. And she, you know, she says, well, you know, we need to get out the Roundup. And I said, no, we're not doing Roundup anymore. You can order online horticultural vinegar. And I think your household vinegar is about 7% acidity. And horticultural vinegar is 30%, 25 to 30% acidity. And you can put it in a sprayer, and it's it works okay with most sprayers. Doesn't eat up the O-rings and that kind of thing. And it works stupendously. And it's not toxic to humans. And it burns the leaves back, and it kept us from having to use Roundup, which we're really, other than fighting back the, what is it called? Leaves of Three, Leave It Be.
Poison Ivy?
Poison Ivy, that's it. Other than fighting back the poison ivy, we don't use Roundup at all.
Yeah, it's a thing to avoid. The poison, there is actually poison ivy popped up in my yard the other day, and I was like, and it's just a tiny little thing, and if you ignore it, that's a bad thing.
yeah. And I turn out to be one of those people that are highly reactive. I've got a neighbor who has it all over his yard, and he gardens like crazy, and it doesn't bother him at all. He can pull it barehanded, and he doesn't get any kind of reaction at all.
Wow. He's better than most of us then.
Yeah, no kidding. But I'm highly reactive, so I do my best to keep it away.
Good to know. I won't ever bring you a pot of poison ivy.
But I'm really I'm only growing this year two things, tomatoes and okra. And that's going to be pretty much it for us. I have, we've talked in the past, I've just about had it with squash bugs and vine borers, and I have surrendered. I will not do those anymore. Yeah, the last time I planted some brachia, which are the broccoli, cabbage, you know, stuff like that. I put it out, and I put out 10 plants, and no, I swear, 5 minutes later, this white cabbage butterfly comes flying over. Yep. I mean, out of nowhere, you know. it was just an endless battle. So okra grows here like you wouldn't believe, and we have to eat a lot of okra anyway, so that's good. And then, of course, tomatoes, wouldn't be summer without tomatoes.
Yeah, I am a big fan of simple, so I'm excited about this idea of I like the Sweet 100 cherry tomato, and the idea of it literally being right outside the kitchen door. I mean, we just eat them out of the garden anyway, but to have even more of them nearby would be a lot of fun.
Right. You know, I'll, what's it called, blanching our tomatoes when we start to get a lot of them. I'll blanch them, and then which is dropping them in boiling water, the skin splits. You pick them out with a spoon and pull the skin off, and then I'll just drop them in the blender, and we'll do freezer bags full of tomato paste, really, but whatever it is,
just pulp, you know, tomato pulp.
Yeah, tomato pulp. And then you can make all kinds of wonderful dishes out of it. If you don't care much for okra because you think it's slimy, then you need to add an acid. And tomato makes a wonderful acid. So a can of crushed tomatoes in your sliced okra and boil it a little bit. Add a big tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce, and you've got a delicious side dish in almost no time at all.
Yum. Now I want okra. and I'm in New England.
It probably grows there.
They list it in the Fedco seed catalog, which is a seed catalog from Maine. So there must be a short season okra.
Must be. Yeah. Okra down here keep going damn near all year.
Huh? No, it would not make it here. I imagine dahlias would work down there almost year round as well.
I bet so. She who must be obeyed is in charge of all the flower needs of, so we have lilies, we have peonies. We have lots of lilac. She loves lilac, which is wonderful, except it's such a short season for it, a blooming season.
Yep.
But, they give her joy, and my job is to ensure that she gets her joy.
Of course it is. The other thing that I have realized is to try, much like you, is to simplify the gardening. Because right now I have, I can hop out at lunch and noodle around a little bit and come back. And I'm like, well, when the real world goes back in the going, we won't be working out of the house. And I want to make it productive yet simple, so it's not a distraction to me. So it's like, like a lot of people, I can get overwhelmed when I have too much to do. And I'm like, I want to focus on the simple and boom, done, you're out, you know?
Right, right. And, chasing vine borers and that kind of stuff. My days for doing that kind of thing are over. And the squash bugs, they taunt me when I go outside now, because they just want me to plant something so they can then humiliate me again.
I did see one of those moths that is the adult of the tobacco hornworm the other day.
Oh, really?
That looks like a little hummingbird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're huge, actually, for a moth. Yeah. Yeah,
and they're quite active during the day, which I think is a little unusual for a moth, but I could be wrong. I imagine by now you've heard me talk about the Garden Fork patrons and the pre-show and the after-show, and I thought I'd give you like 30 seconds of what that's all about. Basically, there are people that listen to the show that contribute to the continued production of the show on a monthly basis, kind of like like NPR or PBS, where you sign on for X number of dollars a month. Like, I'm a member of PBS, and it's $6 a month. And for that, I get access to the older episodes of like Nova and their science and history shows and that kind of thing. With Garden Fork, if you sign on for $5 a month or more, if you have more, that would be quite nice. But if you don't, do not do that. Okay. But for that, I send out just kind of the Mind of Eric kind of emails that also can show up on the app if you get the Patreon app. And also the pre-show and after-show when I record a show with other people. Because invariably, Aaron and I, or Will or Rick and I, are talking about something else after the show because we forgot to talk about it in the show. And that's sometimes fun. It's really fun to listen to Rick tell me what I'm doing wrong with the show, but in a good way, because you need feedback like that. But you could also provide that feedback becoming a patron. So that information is in the show notes of today's episode. You can also go to patreon.com/gardenfork for more information about that. All right, so think about that, and we'll go back to the show. See ya. Speaking of someone who does know something, we got an email from Kevin, who is our expert on everything, about sump pumps, because Aaron and I were talking about our flooded basements.
Right. I remember that. I felt sorry for both of you.
You don't have a basement.
I feel sorry for both of you, though. I do not have a basement. If I had a basement, it'd be flooded all the time because the groundwater here is, you can dig a two 2-foot deep hole and it will fill overnight.
The water table's that high there.
Yeah, yeah. We live on an effluvial plain. This used to be part of the outflow of the James River. And Thomas Jefferson referred to this region as a malarial swamp. And that's about it.
All right. I was wondering why you guys didn't have basements. It seems more prevalent in the South to not have basements. And is that why? Because of the water table or sandy soil or?
Well, in the South, there's just land is so cheap. It's easier just to build a bigger house on top of the land and cheaper than it is to dig a basement. And that's really, really why. Growing up, we did not have a basement, but we did have a tornado shelter in the backyard.
Yeah, that's a good thing to have.
Well, when you have tornadoes, yep.
Anyway, we were talking about one of my solutions or preparedness things with the sump pumps. When your sump pump that is piped into place burns out, I suggested this portable sump pump, and it can be an on-demand thing with this float valve. And Kevin sent me a picture of his sump pump connection to the outlet, and he said, I discovered through desperation a trick with submersible sump pumps. The power from the wall. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I said, which is.
Oh,
I'm trying to help you.
Oh,
trying
sorry.
To be a good sidekick here. You know, you're Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson.
So he says, I discovered through desperation a trick with the submersible sump pumps. The power from the wall is sent through the float, then to the pump. My pumps all have a double plug. See the photo. If you separate them and use the second plug for power, the pump will run continuously. So what's happening is the switch basically plugs into your wall outlet. And then on the back end, in other words, the part of the plug that's looking at you in the face has its own female connector, and you plug the sump pump power cable into that. So the switch controls the power from the outlet through the little gizmo, and then it feeds it into the power plug of the pump.
Ah.
And if you just take the power pump of the plug and you don't go through the little in-between gizmo and plug it right into the wall, it's always on. It'll run continuously.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's good to know. That is good to know. Because if your switch broke or you wanted to use your sump pump somewhere else,
I see.
Or
I
if
see.
It kept on cutting in and out. So that was cool. He sent me a photo of the plug itself.
Well, interesting.
He knows a lot of stuff, that Kevin.
He knows everything. You know, whether it's your DSLR cameras with the the electronics now instead of the film. He knows how to clean the plate and the sensor and all that. Yeah. So, he just knows everything. He needs to be here. Why am I here? I don't know anything.
Because I called you and then you called me back. And
I was foolish enough to answer the phone.
But anyway,
even though I saw it was your on, I only have one experience with sump pumps, and that was on boats. We left Annapolis and sailed down Chesapeake Bay and out to Bermuda. And then about 2 days out of Bermuda, headed for the islands, and about 4 o'clock in the morning, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, my propane alarm goes off, which is kind of a problem in itself, just a kind of an existential question.
Yeah.
Because a boat is a hole in the water, and it holds water out, but it also keeps gas in.
Right.
And so when your propane alarm goes off, does that mean you're about to explode?
Yeah.
You know?
Don't light it. Don't light a cigarette.
Yeah. And believe me, there are plenty of things that spark on a boat anyway, just when little motors come on and that kind of stuff. And I solved this question when I jumped out of the bunk and I was standing in about 3 inches of water. I said, aha. The salt water shorted out the propane sensor.
Oh.
And so in the middle of the night, first thing I do is I hand She Who Must Be Obeyed about a 12-inch little pipe that you fit over a fitting on a hand pump mm-hmm. that's in the cockpit. And I said, here, pump the boat dry. And she didn't think that was funny. And so I started, you know, pulling up all the floorboards, and you have a way of doing this. You start usually at the front, and you work back looking for leaks at all the different places. And we, you know, kicked in the diesel, and I had a switch on the diesel exhaust because it's a saltwater cooled system, and a switch into a sump on the boat. So it would pump, use the diesel to pump the boat dry as well. And then I had a couple of electric sump pumps to hook up to battery cables to drop wherever I needed them. And finally found that, and we had shut off the engine, which by this time was really hot. And I had to lay on top of the engine using some of those flotation seat things and get back to the very back of the boat where they have what we call a packing gland. It's where the
drive shaft.
Prop shaft goes through the hull, and the nut had backed off, and there's little pieces of think of them as cord. It's actually a flax kind of stuff that you cut, and you put five or six of these around it and then tighten it down with the nut to hold a compression, and you want about a drop a minute of water coming into the boat through that because it helps lubricate the shaft and keeps it from getting hot. And anyway, that bolt had twisted off somehow, probably because the prop was spinning backwards when it's out of gear. And it worked that loose and blew all the packing gland out, and the boat was filling with water. And so we crawled back there, screwed it all back together, and pumped the boat dry. And then we had a glass of wine, and I went back to bed.
That's amazing. I would have never thought that for the cooling, you could use the big old diesel in the back to pump out the boat. That's kind of brilliant. That's really brilliant.
Well, thank you. Erin's a big sailor. She knows about this. It's a standard. If you're really deep water sailors, you know, you got to be prepared to rescue yourself because, having the diesel pump is good. You got to worry about strainers and stuff getting into your impeller and all kinds of stuff. So you got to be careful about it. You certainly can't run it dry. So you get it down to a level you can manage, and then you switch it back to outside water. So you're not pumping from the inside anymore.
Wow. So did you continue on your trip, or did you circle back?
Oh, no. We went on down. We ended up in Charlotte, Amalia, St. Thomas. And then the next day, we were running a little late, so we scooted on across with the trade winds, which is what we were looking for all the time, over to Puerto Rico. And we did a tour at the Naval Hospital at Puerto Rico.
That's great. How cool is that?
So that's my sump pump story, but I don't have one about pumping out my basement.
Yeah, it's not fun, but at least you're on land. So it's like at least it's not like, why did I do that dumb thing? And oh, now I'm sinking 2 days out of Bermuda, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, stuff happens, and it was a wonderful trip. Other than that, we had Seaman Scruffy with us, a Cairn Terrier. It was just the three of us, and She Who Must Be Obeyed and I were in the Navy. We call it hot bunking, port and starboard watches, about 5 hours each. We just swap off, and the boat had a wind vane, which would keep it on a particular course set to the wind. That's not necessarily a course. And so mostly we did a lot of reading and cooking, and had time to nap. And Seaman Scruffy, the sea is a very sterile place for a dog because a dog lives its life through its nose.
Right.
And so when Seaman Scruffy would, jump up and start barking, we'd start looking around. And sure enough, there would be whales or porpoises or something in the area because he could smell the exhalation of the whales. And it was just a treat to him. We had to kind of constrain him. Of course, he was always tied to the boat, but we had to make sure he didn't try to jump in, swim out, and play with the whales.
Hey, we have a couple of cool announcements here.
Okay. Is this the announcement you make where you say I'm always complaining and whining about how you do the show?
No. No? That we reserve for the Garden Fork patrons. That's the after show where you take me to task for how I produce the show. So if you all want to hear that, this is a great segue. Garden Fork does have a Patreon page where you can support Garden Fork. It's like I ask for $5 a month, which is like a fancy cup of coffee a month. And for that, you get behind the scenes with Eric. I post stuff to the Patreon Garden Fork app. It also comes in an email to you. We have the after show where we discuss stuff after the podcast. It's kind of Eric's brain, and that's usually a good thing, I think. Anyway, we do have a new patron, and his name is Johnny, and he is an enigma to me. I met him online through Eric from the Root Simple podcast, and Johnny has a very thought-provoking blog called Granola Shotgun. And he recently installed, it's a great name for a blog because as soon as I heard it, it stuck in my head.
Yeah.
It's one of those, I can't what that's called, a word buzz or something in your brain. But anyway, it's called Granola Shotgun. And we were emailing because he just did a DIY solar install with kind of a different twist. And I'm hoping, I have to email him and see if he wants to be on the podcast to kind of talk about it. But go to granolashotgun.com and you can see photos of it. And his idea is not to have this giant, I have a 6,000 kilowatt solar array on my roof that has an inverter and it feeds back to the grid and I got tax benefits from it. He went simple with what I think is a simple battery backup inverter system that was quite inexpensive. So I'll have to get him on to talk about that.
I have thought about doing something like this. And I thought about going down to the Yellow store and getting one of those ultra cheap two-wheel trailers you pull behind your car, and you take it to the red or blue store to get a sheet of plywood or something.
Right.
And putting a hinge on the bottom of two solar panels, 60-watt solar panels, and then hinges on the side so that you had four 60-watt solar panels, and then you could fold them over each other to cover them when you don't need them.
Right.
And then 8 6-volt batteries, which give you, you wire it right, you get 48 volts into an inverter. And then just use a notch stick to set the angle of the solar panels when they're open. So when you're using them to get the right
angle,
try to get angle, and then just move the tongue of the trailer around to get the azimuth right as the sun moves across the sky, and use instead of a generator, just have a permanent emergency solar system that I could keep covered with a tarp and pull out whenever the power went out.
That would work.
Just a thought.
Yeah. Now you got me thinking. Because Harbor Freight Tools has those trailers. They like fold up. I mean, I think they have like a 4x8 bed or maybe a little smaller, but they can fold up and go into your garage against the wall. But you could use that with some panels and, oh, wow.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. And then I thought, well, another use, we could.
Okay. After excising that comment, I'd like to move forward with some great reviews that people have written on our iTunes page. And this is from Michelle, who I know from the Garden Fork discussion group on Facebook. I love the title of her review. Exceptional Normal Folks.
Wow.
Isn't that great?
She must be talking about you.
Yeah. 5 stars. DIY cooking, gardening, beekeeping, and entertaining. Normal everyday people research, troubleshoot, and report on the same tasks, projects, and experiences that most all of us encounter at some point in life. There you go. That really sums it up. I don't need to introduce the show anymore. I'm just going to read that.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. Yeah.
That and Haphazard DIY, which one of our other supporters came up with, and I'm blanking on her name who described me that way. But I like that too.
Just a, so a haphazard individual. He didn't really. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
And the next one is from AOG3. And I don't know who that is. That is cryptic, but that's, some people are like that. Good show. I especially like the cooking parts. 5 stars. We have no cooking today. Uh-oh. Good show.
No. I talked about how to make okra and tomatoes.
Oh, there you go.
So, yep.
I have enjoyed some of the chit-chat between Eric and guests. It can get a little long at times, but it's a podcast, so I have complete control of the length.
Yeah, if I were you, I'd play this at about 3x.
Yeah, sometimes the show does go long, and but I don't really edit it too much because, yeah, you can. There's other podcasts that I just bounce out. I'm like, okay, this is not something I want to listen to. But yeah, no, all the better. And thank you for the 5 stars, AOG3. I like that. All right, thank you, Rick. Thanks for taking the time.
It's always a pleasure.
radio@gardenfork.tv is our address. We want to hear from you. And thank you again for Kevin for his information, and Johnny at Granola Shotgun for his support and triggering our whole solar conversation there.
Well, it's good to hear your voice again, my friend. Talk to you later.
All right, see y'all.
Bye-bye.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com.